I forget where. That's
Love
right. We don't
Talk
longer have.
Radio.
Damn it. Good afternoon, everybody, on a absolutely putrid New York evening. Seth and Sean show, backsportspage.com. I was waiting for our terrible intro, but luckily it just wasn't there. Sean, I'll be calling you now. There he is. So, quite a bit to talk about. It's been an interesting 24 hours, to say the least. How are you doing, Mr. Palmer?
I am doing well. Welcome to tax season, Mr. Caymans, and the litany that comes with it for all accountants.
Yes. So this is my 1 hour withdrawal from it.
It's good that you are trying to de-stress on this, I don't know, gloomy, rainy evening in New York City. But spring has come. It was 54 degrees today with 2 inches of rain in New York. And if it was 20 degrees colder, we would have had 8 inches of snow. So, you know what? I'll take it. It's pretty good. NFL free agency opened up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. A couple of surprises. Not many, but a couple. The World Baseball Classic is undergoing for those that don't even care, which I really think that my co-host couldn't give a rat's whatever about it. The NCAA tournament is coming up with the final Big East tournament starting tomorrow, which I will be in attendance for the first game, second game at least, the 2 o'clock game where my Syracuse Orange face off against South Florida, which hopefully they'll play better than they did against Georgetown. But we'll get to that in a second. And the NBA is in full swing with the Knicks with one of the worst performances I've ever seen a basketball team play last night. So, kicking it off, NFL free agency.
Sure, but I mean, in regards to the Big East tournament, there's only one real interesting game in the Big East tournament. It's actually going on right now, and that would be the women's UConn-Notre Dame game. The Big East.
Wow, really?
Realistically, is there a better Big East game than the women's UConn-Notre Dame game?
That's true. Fair point.
Now, I'm not a huge women's basketball fan, but if I had my choice of watching that or watching Syracuse versus Cincinnati or Southern Florida versus DePaul, I mean, we have a whole bunch of mediocre in the Big East, but we'll get to that in a few. Let's talk a little bit of NFL. Free agency
sure.
is obviously – I'm sorry?
Yeah, free agency is in full swing. 4 o'clock today was the new calendar year, and trades were officially consummated. And the wink, wink, nod, nod deals were made at the stroke of 4 o'clock.
And were there any that really, before we even get to the trades of yesterday, were there any that really raised your eyebrows?
Well, Martellus Bennett signing a 4-year deal with the Bears kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. I definitely was not prepared to see that happen. Danelle Ellerbe moving on from the Super Bowl champion Ravens going to the Miami Dolphins, I think is a pretty big, it's a big deal because the Ravens are losing a lot of their players due to retirement, Ray Lewis, salary cap ramifications, Antoine Bolden, and we'll talk about that in a second. And now you're losing Paul Kruger to the Browns for $9 million, and now Danelle Ellerbe and maybe Ed Reed along with it. The Ravens are not going to be the 2012 Baltimore Ravens next year. They're going to have a lot of missing pieces. And there's a lot of salary cap out there to be had. They're not from the normal teams that you would think of, the Dallas Cowboys or the Washington Redskins. But, I mean, there are teams that are flush with cap room, starting with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Indianapolis Colts, and Cleveland Browns. And I think that you're going to see those three teams making a huge impact, at least in the first couple of days of free agency.
Well, Indianapolis signed 5 different players, the big name being Gosser Cherlis, the offensive lineman. A couple other players, Greg Toler, Eric Walden. Now, Indy, you know, went from, what was it, 1-15, 2-14 to a playoff spot this year. And I don't think people thought it was a fluke, but people are not under the impression this is a team that's a player away from the championship. And being 35 million under the cap with an owner who is willing to spend, you know, it is logical that they were the most active in the first day of free agency. The other somewhat surprising to me, Kansas City, with some interesting signings. Dante Robinson for 3 years, $15 million, which makes sense because I'm now, you know, there were some rumors that Dean Milner, the cornerback from Alabama, may have been the number one pick. That's now probably out the window. Anthony Fasano, a solid tight end from Miami. And one of the more unusual ones, Chase Daniel to a 3 year contract. I didn't even know Chase Daniel was still in the NFL.
Well, Chase Daniel is backing up Drew Brees for the last 4 years. I think the thing is, remember, in the NFL, you hear 3-, 4-, 5-year contracts. Remember, these contracts are not guaranteed. So I don't think you're going to see Dante Robinson there for 3 years. I certainly don't think you may see Chase Daniel there for 3 years, depending on the amount of money. But this is all about, I mean, the years on a contract in the NFL are all about prorating the salary bonus, the signing bonus. So if you have, and we've explained this a couple of times on the show before, if you have a $9 million signing bonus and you sign him to 3 years, well, that means on the cap it's $3 million each year. As opposed to a $9 million signing bonus for 1 year, you have a $9 million hit on the first year. So what teams tend to do is they tend to spread out that signing bonus so they can minimize the cap hit in case they have to cut him or in case they just don't want him. I haven't taken a look at Dante Robinson dollars, but I'd venture to say that the third year is probably a whole lot more than the first, which then allows them to say, no, we don't want it, and take that $3 million cap hit instead of paying the annual salary. That's kind of what happened with Anquan Boldin.
And we'll get to Anquan in a minute. If anyone wants to call in and talk a little bit of football, and actually I apologize, I was so busy today, I didn't even actually have a chance to promote the show. Nor did I have a chance to call you to have you promote the show.
That's true. I didn't. There were a couple of other surprising signings, though. Well, if you want to call in, I'm sorry, 760-283-0846. There were a couple other surprising signings today. They happened late. The Dolphins dumped Carlos Dansby when they got Danielle Ellaby. The Bears are finalizing a deal with German Bushrod, who is the guard for the Saints. And the Saints have been very good at keeping their offensive line in check. Last year they lost Jarari Evans, but kept lost Nick. And kept Evans, and Nick's got hurt and pretty much was out almost the entire year. The Rams landed Jared Cook, the tight end from the Titans. Harry Melton, the big defensive tackle from the Bears, signed his franchise number. The Cardinals, who probably need a quarterback more than anything else, are close to landing Joshua Cribbs, which would be interesting. You know, it would be interesting with Joshua Cribbs going to that team because, remember, we've always looked at where Larry Fitzgerald is and is there ever going to be a sidekick to Larry Fitzgerald, again, mentioning Anquan Boldin. How many times can we mention him in one show?
And well, considering we haven't even talked about the trade yet, there'll be quite a few more coming forward.
Yeah, seriously. But so they drafted Michael Floyd, and now they're looking at Anquan Boldin. They also have Early Doucette, who I think was released yesterday. But they have a couple of other wideouts, and it's all about, in Arizona, getting these guys the ball. So now it looks like who are they going to get as a quarterback. I've heard rumors that the Cardinals have inquired about Ryan Mallett, the second stringer from New England. They did tender Brian Hoyer, who I believe played at Ohio State, correct? He was the quarterback for Ohio State?
No, he was at Michigan State, I believe.
Michigan State, excuse me, sorry. And they're looking into Matt Castle, so why not make three former New England Patriots all on the same team, and they still got Kevin Cobb. So other signings of note, looking at the wire, Paul Kruger signs with the Browns for huge money. What do we got here?
Well, the obvious, Mike Wallace going to Miami.
For a checkload of money.
A 5-year, $65 million contract. Now, Miami needed...
Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm sorry. That,
no,
now,
I was going to say, to put that in perspective, last year Vincent Jackson got a five-year $55 million contract. So Vincent Jackson got $11 million, $10 million less for the same amount of years.
Yeah, this is $30 million guaranteed, and the $13 per year is only behind Megatron, Calvin Johnson, and Larry Fitzgerald. Now, with between him and Hartline, Brian Hartline re-signing with Miami for $6 million per year, they're looking about $19 to $20 million in two wideouts. Is Wallace worth it to you?
Well, again, I think you have to look within the numbers as to how much that contract is actually worth. Hartline's contract is only worth $3 million in the first year. So it ends up at a $9 million salary in the fifth year. So I don't think I'll ever see that $9 million. Is Wallace himself worth that much? No, absolutely not. But again, this is a case of supply and demand. And aside from Mike Wallace and Wes Welker, Mike Wallace is 27 years old. Welker is in his 30s. Aside from those two, there are no legitimate top-flight wideouts out there. And it's very unusual for a wideout at 27 or 26 years old who is a top-flight wideout to be able to be bid upon. And I think what the Dolphins were looking at was, here's Minnesota, who just made a huge deal and got rid of their wideout, and they're going to be coming and looking at our guy. We got to sign, seal, and deliver this right away.
Well, there are a couple other wideouts out there. Obviously, he's a restricted free agent, Victor Cruz, where they put a first, I believe they put a first-round tender on. Greg Jennings, fair enough. Greg Jennings, from Green Bay, although he's obviously on the older side of his career, but he's still a pretty solid, pretty solid wideout. Sorry, the tax year is kind of taking its effect right now. It is a lot of money. 65. I mean, no one. I don't think anyone does the impression. I don't know. Wallace has. When he's healthy, he's as outside of Calvin Johnson is about as good a big player receiver as there is in the league. It's a question of now Tannehill has, now I don't know who their running back is going to be, with most likely Reggie Bush gone and Daniel Thomas not proven that he can take the job. But Ryan Tannehill does have some weapons out in Miami now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what they actually do at the running back spot, whether they draft somebody or not. They've also just lost their tight end in that. Anthony Fasano, their left tackle, Jake Long, is also a free agent, whether he comes back or not. There's a lot of flux in the NFL, especially since the cap did not go up this year. This is the first year it's remained flat in some time. So we'll see. I mean, the interesting thing amongst the NFL is there are a ton of right tackles out there. And I know Cherless signed today, but there are four or five or six right tackles out there, including Jake Long. So it'll be interesting where the domino effect goes through. We did have a couple of trades in the last couple of days. I mean, we talked about the Alex Smith trade last week. I think that is a big trade looking at what the Chiefs have done since. I mean, the Chiefs have signed Anthony Fasano, who is a blocking tight end, to go with Tony Moecki, who is a receiving tight end. They re-signed Dwayne Bowe. They still have Jamaal Charles. They have a pretty solid defense. I wouldn't call it a great defense, but that team can make a lot of noise. I mean, I know that last year we predicted them in the playoffs, or I think I predicted them in the playoffs.
You predicted them in the playoffs.
Then again, I also predicted the Raiders going 11-5, so I mean, there you go. But I think that they can make some noise if they're healthy next year. I think Alex Smith is the right fit for the Andy Reid offense.
I think he is too, although it will be interesting as Smith has never been a quarterback who's thrown 35, 40 times a game. And obviously that's the way Reid's offense has always been. We'll see what happens with
him. Now, you remember Alex Smith in college. I don't. Did he play in a system where he threw 35 times a game? I mean, I don't remember Utah team.
He played, as I said, with Urban Meyer at Utah, so it was more of that spread offense. But they had, I don't remember the running back. They had a pretty decent running back, I believe, for a team that went to, I want to say they went to the Sugar Bowl. And then I think they lost to Alabama, or they beat Alabama, I forget which. I don't know. You know, Fasano is just a pretty good all-around tight end. He does, you know, he's pretty big, pretty good on the in the red zone. Dwayne Bowe is going to have to prove, you know, I'm still not sold on the wideouts. Dwayne Bowe has been kind of, although he was re-signed for big money, I don't think he has earned that money yet.
No, I agree with that. I think it's all supply and demand with him.
Right. And, you know, his is being built on potential more than anything else. And going into his fourth year with a good passing coach and a solid quarterback, we think, in Alex Smith, you know, this is the year he's going to, you know, I don't know who their number two would be. I guess they drafted Jonathan Baldwin last year from Pitt, but he was pretty disappointing. You know, we'll worry about that kind of. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the draft. And
remember,
see how
they also
forward.
Have the top. They have the top pick in the first round. They have the first pick in the draft. So I foresee them picking the right tackle out of, I believe, it's out of Utah, Luke Jokel. Oh no, he's out of A&M.
He's out of A&M. Well, we'll be doing our NFL draft preview. You know, about a month from now. Or when I actually have time to look at something.
Well, just to give you a little preview on where we're going in the next couple of weeks. Next week will be our NCAA preview, at least for the tournament. We'll have all the seeds out by Tuesday. They're actually coming out on Sunday, so you'll be able to follow your brackets. We do not endorse gambling here at the Seth and Arden Sports Radio Show, but we do have pools set up. So if you'd like to participate for no money or money, give us a holler. In two weeks, on the 26th, we'll have Chris DeSano, who works for the A10, the Atlantic 10, on our show, talking about the Sweet 16 and the Final Four. So we'll do that. And hopefully we'll have Mr. Keegan Reed on at some time in the next couple of weeks, because the NHL trading deadline is coming up soon, too.
But we also have to congratulate, because 45 minutes ago, he became Papa Keegan Reed.
Hey, Papa Keegan.
So
Papa
he had a...
Nagila Havana.
I don't know. He's got a big tattoo of a cross. I'm pretty sure he's not singing Hava Nagila. But, yeah, he had a baby boy about an hour ago.
Congratulations to Mr. Keegan Reed. Congratulations to Papa
then
Reed.
Probably after that, we'll probably start talking a little bit of baseball, a little bit of baseball preview. I'm sure Jared Zwirling will be back from ESPN. We hope to have back on the show. He's always a good host, a good guest.
Yeah, and we'll have our illustrious fantasy guru Fred Steinman on once or twice over the course of the baseball season to give us some fantasy knowledge. So we'll certainly get into that.
He'll be replacing me because
he can.
So we have some good stuff coming up in the next month. And of course, if anybody has ideas, has things they want to throw out there, you know, we're equal opportunists. So let us know.
There were a couple of other trades that went down. Number one, Antoine Bolden going from one Super Bowl participant to the other.
Never heard of him. Bolden, you say?
Bolden. Bolden, the hero, or one of the heroes of the Super Bowl Baltimore Ravens, traded across the coast, I'm sorry, Jeff Fink, to the San Francisco 49ers for a sixth-round choice.
Yeah, well, I'm a little surprised. My understanding was, didn't Bolden say if he wasn't re-signing with Baltimore, he wasn't signing with anyone?
Of course he did. Didn't Tony Gonzalez say he was retiring?
Of course he did.
Yeah, but he's back too.
Yeah, well.
Bolden said if he was released, he wouldn't sign with anybody else. He was not technically released. He was traded.
Yeah, that was a... I mean, they needed to, obviously they had to clear the cap space because
the pro, the issue that I have two issues with this. Number one, if they were clearing the cap space, who are they clearing it for? Because they lost everybody today they could possibly want in Kruger and in Ellerby, unless they get back Ed Reed. That's number one. Number two, Joe Flacco has a lot of balls. And I don't mean footballs. I mean, he's got brass balls. He comes out and says, yeah, Antoine, don't take a pay cut to stay with the Ravens. Stick to your guns. You deserve the money. Well, Joey Flacco, how about giving up a little bit of that $120 million that you just got and giving it to Antoine so he can stay on the team? You've got to be kidding me. I hate when players do this, especially when they re-sign. And, okay, so everybody knows I am not the biggest Patriots supporter.
No.
It's acknowledged. It's acknowledged. I'm not a big Patriots fan. I have no respect for Tom Brady as a player. Absolutely none. But I have all the respect for Tom Brady as a teammate. I mean, look at that salary that he took this year and in the coming years, and he gave up for what was other players. The only reason that the Patriots may have a chance at re-signing Wes Welker this year is because Tom Brady said, you can half my salary and give it to other players. Hey, Joey Flacco, where are you when we're talking about Antoine Bolden? Where are you saying don't take a pay cut? You got to be kidding me. You got some brass balls, my friend, brass balls.
So does he have brass balls?
Got some brass ones, my friend, brass ones. So the other trade that took place yesterday, not a surprise to me, surprise to some people, Percy Harvin, the only surprise of this trade was that it was within the conference. Percy Harvin goes from the Minnesota, I almost said the Timberwolves, from the Minnesota Vikings to the Seattle Seahawks for a first and a third this year and a fourth next year. That's a lot of value for a guy that wasn't going to re-sign with you next year.
No, I think that both teams made out about as well as they could. Seattle needed a stud wide receiver. And if Percy Harvin is healthy, which is a big if, he is a stud wide receiver. Now, Minnesota wasn't winning the championship anytime in the near future, but the first-round pick is not, you know, it's not extraordinarily high, but the first pick will be nice, and the third- or fourth-round pick, I think, next year as well. You know, the feeling is pretty, you know, the Minnesota fans are devastated. I spoke with one of the biggest ones I know, Dale from Los Angeles, who just said he hates it, hates everything about it. But there seems to be kind of a mixed feeling because Harvin had, I think in a lot of ways had outworn his welcome in Minnesota, you know, his headaches, this, that, the other thing. And, you know, I don't know if Harvin is a great player. I don't know if Harvin is a bona fide number one on a title team. But then again, I'm not really sure what that means. So,
well, we're going to see next year. I mean, Seattle is – I mean, the problem that Seattle had all these years wasn't getting a running back, getting a wide receiver. It was getting a quarterback. And it seems like if Russell Wilson can do what he did last year, they're pretty stacked across the entire team. I mean, their defensive secondary is probably the best in the NFL. Their front four and back three are pretty good. Their offensive line is excellent with Russell Okung at the tackle spot. They got Marshawn Lynch behind them. They released Leon Washington today because they got Percy Harvin. They now have a wideout group of Sidney Rice, Darryl Jackson, and Percy Harvin. That's not bad.
Darryl Jackson, I mean, I thought it was Golden Tate.
Not Darryl Jackson. Who's the guy from Stanford? Possession receiver that they got.
They don't have Golden Tate anymore?
Oh, they do have Golden Tate, but they have one other player as well. Who is? He came out of Stanford. He was a seventh-round pick. And I have to find this out. He caught 66 balls in his first year.
Is that Doug Baldwin?
Yes, Doug Baldwin. There you go. Obviously not Darryl Jackson. So overall, that team is. I mean, they got some talent going on there. I mean, I think that They can make a run. I think they're actually going in probably right now the favorite. Amongst the guys that were released in the last couple of days, Ryan Fitzpatrick of the $55 million contract that lasted a year and a half. And that just tells you right there how fungible, oh, I like that word, how fungible NFL contracts are. He got signed to a $55 million contract a year and a half ago, and because there was a $3 million bonus due tomorrow, they released him. So the cap, it was a six-year, $59 million contract signed October 2011. And here he is in March 2013 out of a job. So basically those numbers don't really mean very much. So Ryan Fitzpatrick released. Nnamdi Asamoah also released from the Philadelphia Eagles. And Tony Gonzalez has decided, hey, let me come back for more. We're going to get the gang back together again. So if, as a Jets fan, I would love the Jets to be trading Darrell Revis, taking that money and spending on Nnamdi Asamoah and giving us another corner. But who knows? What do you think the Giants are? Giants are going to have to look in the draft for a tight end now, right? Because Martellus Bennett signs with the Bears. They got to be looking for the guy out of Stanford, right? Zach Elam.
Yeah, or Tyler Etz from Notre Dame. The Giants. Oh, but I don't know. You know, Kevin Boss was a third round pick. Bear Pasco, before a guy was a third round pick, or it was actually I think a seventh round pick. The Giants seem to do very well. You know, I used to question, their GM Jerry Reese when they. I mean, my big one was when they, I was talking about this in regards to Victor Cruz. You know, they released Steve Smith. Remember when they released Steve Smith 2 years ago? Steve Smith led the league in catches that year, and they wouldn't re-sign him. And he ends up going to the, pretty much tears his knee up, goes to the Eagles. Pretty much is the fourth receiver in Philly, gets cut, and no one ever hears from them again. They seem to find a way to just, what do they bring in? They bring in an undrafted guy from UMass. And he becomes one of the most beloved players, to be honest, in the NFL. And in Victor Cruz, I don't really worry about the Giants GM, to be honest, the Giants front office, to be honest.
I have a lot of faith in them. How to do a mean salsa.
No, that's the most important thing he did. The Giants, yes, they need a tight end. They could probably use, they re-signed Aaron Ross, which I found strange, but, because Jacksonville signed him to a multi-year contract a few years ago. So I guess he was cut relatively recently. I think he was actually on the championship team. So he was only cut a year ago and back in New York. They need some help on the defensive side. They signed Colin Bryant for a pretty cap-friendly deal, 3 years, $8
million. Colin Jenkins,
my fault.
I thought that was a great deal, what they signed, 3 years and $9 million. I mean, that definitely is the replacement for Chris Canton.
Yes. So, I have a lot more faith in my team's front office than you do in yours, deservedly so.
Well, when somebody came up to me and said, who are the Jets quarterbacks? I was like, well, we got David Garrard, Brady Quinn, Mark Sanchez, Craig McElroy, and Tim Tebow. If you take these guys in 2009, we're set. Because we got an all-pro. We got a guy coming off a Heisman Trophy winning season. We got a first-round pick. We got a guy coming off the national championship. And who am I missing? Missing one more. We got five guys in 2009.
And David Garrard, who was a solid starter in Jacksonville.
No, he was my all-pro.
Oh, was he? Okay, then we have Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez, who led his team to the AFC title game, plus probably sucks with half of New York.
All right, so 2009, we're rolling in it. Unfortunately, it's now 2013. We got problems if we're signing David Garrard as our starting quarterback. But, yeah, as I believe one in the New York Post writers said yesterday, it's my friend Adam Thaw. Adam Thaw said this today. He said, so these are our quarterbacks. With the first pick of the 2014 NFL Draft, the New York Jets will be selecting Jadeveon Clowney. That would be fantastic.
Well, you know it's not going to be a good year where less than a month after the Super Bowl, you're already looking into, or you're looking at the 2014 draft having not had the 2013 draft.
Well, I got to tell you, this kind of reminds me, as a New York sports fan, and I don't think you can appreciate it. You may, but I know other New York sports fans could, in the fact that this reminds me of the Knicks like 4 years ago, when the Knicks were in that salary cap hell, and they said, just get me two more years in, and we'll go get a LeBron, or we'll go get a Carmelo, or we'll go get somebody, but you got to ride the Steve Francis train for two more years until we can get to that point, or the, I don't even remember who else, it was a horrible team, it was the Zach Randolphs, the Allen Houston, the last of the Allen Houstons, the Jalen Roses, I mean, it was the worst team you could possibly watch until last night. And you believed in Donnie Walsh. And you said, all right, Donnie Walsh is going to wipe the slate clean and we're going to start all over again. I don't have that faith in the Jets offense, front office. And that's the biggest problem I have right now. So I got to hope this guy Itzik does something right. And the first thing that's on his plate is the trading of Darrelle Revis. Because there's no way that he stays after this year. But we'll see. I mean, the draft is, what, 5 weeks away?
I was hoping it was going to be more. Well, if it's 5 weeks away, then I will actually be in somewhat recovery mode.
You'll be good. It's the last weekend in April.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to change dates of that. Of the Tuesday. We're not going to be able to do a Tuesday show that night. So I'll fill in the fans at a later point. I've been asked to partake in an event, which is kind of funny. Anyway, so we're halfway through the show.
You can't tease us like that.
I have been asked to be a model.
You can tease us like that. Well
yeah.
done.
Thank you. So A friend of a friend has starting a clothing design company, and about 7 or 8 of their friends apparently went together on Facebook and started looking through people who they wanted to model, and somehow I got chosen. If anyone has seen me, I pretty much have a face for radio. So I was a little bit taken aback by it, but certainly flattered and happy to do.
Those personal training sessions are definitely paying off.
Not quite yet, they're not. But anyway, so that I believe that's Tuesday the 23rd.
Tuesday the 23rd of April. Okay.
We'll manage
to switch maybe with Papa Reed, and we'll see what we can do around that time, but. Congratulations, sir, on the start of your modeling career.
So yeah, let's see if I got this straight. Seth Kamen, CPA, financial advisor, insurance agent, owner of Back Sports Page, and aspiring model. And we mean right side Fred.
Wait, here's the better question. Which one of those makes you the most money? You had to think about that for a second, didn't you?
No, I don't. I sure as hell know it's not Back Sports Page. So
maybe a modeling career. Wow.
I'm not really holding my breath on it. It'll be fun to do for a night. Going
forward,
we're
certainly going to have to publicize this so all of our fans can tune in and see you, and we may webcast it.
That's what I'm sure people want to see. going forward, you wanted to talk about the World Baseball. Are you done laughing?
I'm still laughing.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Breathe.
Okay.
If you want to make fun of either of the hosts, the number, of course, is 760-283-0846.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now have a model as a host. So if you'd like to call in, remember, Seth is about 6'2". 6'3 or 6'2". Which one?
I'll take 6'1", 6'2". Somewhere around there is fine.
All right, 6'1", 6'2". He's a svelte body.
Is that what it says in my GDA profile? I'm svelte?
Svelte. He's looking for a date. So now he's not only, now not only do you have to look for, you have CPA, you have accountant, you have financial advisor. Why do I feel like the guy on the money line? You have Bob, and now you can say you went out with a model. How much better can this be? 760-283-0846. We'll be screening calls, so please send pictures.
Okay. Back to why we asked you to do the show. There's some useless event called the World Baseball Classic. You want to talk about it? Because I sure as hell don't care.
Well, the World Baseball Classic is the baseball's answer to the World Cup. Now Seth can stop laughing. Basically, it's a bunch of teams that got together. It's like the Olympics. The Olympics don't have baseball anymore. So Bud Selig, in his infinite wisdom, decided to pit teams against each other from different countries. Of course, he did this in the middle of spring training. And, of course, he did this with the proviso that not only do you not have to be from that country, like Mike Piazza, who's not from Italy, but his grandparents are from Italy, so he can play on the Italian team, which he's not doing. He's coaching. But basically, David Hernandez, this was just an instance, David Hernandez was supposed to play on the Mexican national team, the Mexican WC team, except his paperwork didn't get filed in time to prove that he had heritage in Mexico. So the next day, there was an injury in the U.S. team, so he switched over and played for the U.S. because he was born in the U.S., so he's got heritage here. That's how absolutely moronic this is. However, I did find myself watching all of the World Baseball Classic this past weekend when I was sick as a dog here on my couch.
Of course you did.
Yeah, and I got to say, it was interesting baseball. These guys actually care, which is more than I can say for my co-hosts. They actually care about winning for their country, which is kind of impressive. David Wright, Justin Morneau for Canada, great at-bats. It looked like they're in the swing of things, and it's good for David Wright to get some quality at-bats with a winning team, because we all know that's not going to happen when the regular season starts. But that's just what it is. I mean, tonight at 8 o'clock is the U.S. versus Puerto Rico on ESPN. The U.S., who supposedly have the best baseball talent in the world, this is what makes this tournament moronic, though. So, name the top, Seth, off the top of your head, name the top three pitchers that you believe are in Major League Baseball.
Justin Verlander.
Okay.
Clayton Kershaw.
Uh-huh.
Johan Santana.
Okay.
All right,
David Price. You want to take a guess at how many of those three are in the World Baseball Classic?
I'm going to say zero.
That's exactly correct. Absolutely none. You want to know why they're not in the Baseball Classic?
Because they don't give a crap?
Because it happens in March. Because it happens before the season. Because it's the most ill-timed thing since the Pro Bowl. If you are Major League Baseball and you want people to care about this, if you want these players to care, in my opinion, you need to shut down baseball for 2 weeks during the All-Star break, and instead of the All-Star break every 4 years, play this tournament for 2 weeks. That's the only way you're going to get these guys to play, because the Justin Verlanders and Clayton Kershaws, who haven't thrown all year, now all of a sudden they're going to be throwing in a game when they haven't even had spring training yet. It's just bad precedent. I mean, I just don't see it. So that's my rally against the World Baseball Classic. I did enjoy watching it. I do expect to tune in for at least one or two more games. Hopefully the U.S. can take something out of this, because the last time, they got knocked out in the second round. So tomorrow starts the last Big East tournament as we know it. Next year, the Big East will comprise of the seven Catholic schools, and I believe it's now Xavier and Butler, right?
Yes.
Xavier and Butler, maybe one other. So we're adding more Catholic schools. But they keep the Big East moniker. Syracuse lost to Georgetown in one of the most pathetic performances I've ever seen on Saturday. And what do you think? I mean, this is a dying conference, this conference. What are your thoughts? I mean, we've all talked about realignment and reconfiguration of conferences. But this is the last time we're going to see the Big East Conference the way the Big East Conference is. What do you take away from it?
From a historic perspective or this current year?
Either one. Fill me with your knowledge, wise one.
From a historic perspective, it was for many years the best conference. It rivaled the ACC as the best conference in college basketball. In the mid to late 80s, it probably was when you had the great Georgetown teams of Patrick Ewing and Sleepy Floyd, St. John's with Chris Mullin and Mark Jackson, Villanova winning a title in 80, of course, in 85. Syracuse being consistently top 10 to 15 team almost throughout that entire span. You know, then you had pretty much, they took kind of a lull in the early 90s where they weren't quite of the same caliber. And other schools came in, other schools kind of rose. With Connecticut, you know, kind of becoming a force in the late 90s and going forward. And then with the obvious, the obvious enhancement of the school, of the conference, bringing in Louisville, bringing in Marquette, bringing in some of the newer schools. It's been considered consistently the best conference in college basketball over the last 5 to 7 to 10 years. The problem I've had with that is when you have 16 teams, you know, it can't not be a good conference when you have 16 teams in it. It'll be missed from a basketball perspective. It'll be missed from a coaching personality perspective. And once again, we'll see where everything goes forward. Notre Dame is off to the ACC next year. The Catholic 7+2 should be pretty good. I'm a reactionary. I'm an old school college sports fan, and it hurt, you know, all of that, what's happened over the last year is hurt. And hopefully my cynicism will subside as I enjoy it more, as I get more accustomed to everything that's happening, but we'll see.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that, at least to me, is that we were talking about big conferences, and now with this new realignment, every conference becomes big, right? There are no real – I mean, the smallest conference is probably going to be the Catholic Schools Plus Two as far as automatic bids and whatnot. But, I mean, the ACC is growing. The Big Ten, as we both know, is going to be growing. So, I mean, this is going to be – at least for basketball's sake, the super conferences. It's not going to be, I don't know how you can define one conference being better than the other at this point, because you're going to have so many teams, so you're going to have to go, well, the top four teams are better than the top four teams, and so on. It's not a, I don't see it as a conference anymore. I don't know why. It kind of reminds me of, like, when hockey went to their conferences, and that 10 out of the 14 teams got in, where it's like these conferences are just too big. So I think you're right. It takes away from the play, especially outside conference games, because there will be less and less of those with bigger conferences.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So tomorrow starts – the last Big East tournament, I will miss the Big East tournament. I've been to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've been to at least 7 Big East tournaments in my career, at least, maybe 8. And tomorrow I will be at the last one, at least on the first day, to watch Syracuse hopefully beat South Florida if they can play anything better than what they have. But going into this weekend, I think Georgetown has the most to lose as a one seed, don't you? I mean, I've watched a little bit of, I mean, Michigan lost this past week. Who are your one seeds going in? or have you not been able to pay enough attention due to tax season, and that is a good idea?
No. I mean, the one seeds, you have Gonzaga, which I think, well, especially having clinched the conference championship last night over St. Mary's, is a one seed. Indiana is probably going to be a one seed, assuming they don't get knocked off in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. People are giving it to Duke. I find that a little bit silly. Mm-hmm. I would give it to the winner of the Duke. If either Duke or Miami wins the ACC, I'd give it to them. The fourth one is a complete toss-up. Because all these teams seem to be losing. So
But Georgetown. I mean, Georgetown's been winning. Winning a lot.
Well, the problem, I mean, you've seen Georgetown. Does Georgetown strike you as anything remotely close to a number one seed?
No, but at this point, they've been playing like one. I mean,
yeah,
you don't have to be an offensive juggernaut to be a number one seed, and they certainly have been able to clamp down on the defensive side. I mean, we saw, at least up in Syracuse, we saw a total defensive domination of the Orange. I saw another one on Sunday. This team is playing as well as any team in the country right now.
Yeah.
I think they're playing just as well as Gonzaga. They just are a different team. I mean, they're a different style of team. They play a lot more defense than they do offense. And in the tournament, does that work? I don't know. I mean, I don't remember the last defensive specialist team that went very far. I mean, it always comes to mind the Wisconsin teams with Dick Bennett, in which they are able to slow down the game and value every single possession. And Georgetown reminds me of them, but even those Wisconsin teams didn't get very far in the tournament because of their style.
Well, I think there are a lot of teams up there for the fourth seed. The problem is they've all been losing. Florida gets beat by Kentucky. Kansas gets beat by TCU. There's no Pac-10 team of particular relevance this year. I'd be surprised if they gave it to another Big Ten team, although it's probably you could see a Michigan or a Michigan State or an Ohio State. I mean, there are some worthy teams. It is by far the best conference in college basketball this year. You know, maybe if I would assume, my assumption is if either Louisville or Georgetown won, either of them could be the fourth one seed. But it should be a good tournament. Similar to Alito a couple years ago, there is no great team. Not as similarly to 2 years ago, the caliber of play this year has been significantly better. So I'm looking forward to it.
Is the caliber of play significantly better because there are no dominating players this year?
It could be. 2 years ago, I thought the quality of basketball was horrendous. I mean, I thought it was unwatchable, unwatchably bad. And,
right, but there were a couple of years ago, there were a lot of one-and-out guys who
right.
basically were, for lack of a better term, showmanship, who were showmen who were playing isolation basketball all day. Now, the top players in the NCAA right now are, for lack of a better term, glue guys. They're guys, or they're point guards, or they're small forwards. They're not shooting guards. They're not power forwards or centers. And when you're a point guard, you can't really isolate every single play. You have to, I mean, Marcus Smart, I believe, of Oregon State. It's Oregon State, right? Oregon?
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State. I knew it was OS. OSU. Is a scintillating player. I mean, I enjoy watching him. I enjoy watching Michael Carter-Williams play. But these are the top players in basketball right now, the top NCAA basketball players. And I think it's a better basketball to watch because it's more of a team game than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, we got about 10 minutes, so let's kind of jump around a little bit more. You want to hit on it? The NBA on the Heat winning 18 straight?
Well, it's impressive. it's impressive. They almost lost the Knicks a couple of times. They played especially this past week ago on Sunday. They almost lost to the Knicks. They have played incredibly, and again, this is where LeBron James reminds me of Michael Jordan in his ability to turn it on when he needs to, and basically just run away from everybody else. And the most fascinating thing I believe about that Chicago Bull team that went 72-10, right? 72-10 or 70-12 is that while they were going through it, everybody was like, of course they do that. That's normal. That's what they do. They're the Bulls. They're that good. And it wasn't a, holy cow, look at that team doing that. And I think for lack of any other reason, that's the same thing that the Heat are going through right now. When the Blackhawks were going through their streak, everyone was like, oh, wow, the Blackhawks are winning these games. They're approaching a record, blah, 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 blah. Nobody thinks that of the Heat. At least I don't hear it. Do you hear that on your side?
No. No one thinks of them in that same capacity that I know of. So.
Yeah, they're just that good. I mean, they have probably the two best players in basketball, and I know this. Seth and I are not going to get into this argument again as to the best ever and why LeBron can't be. But they have probably the two best players in basketball. They have a third complementary player. And, you know, it was interesting. I saw this on ESPN today. I think it was ESPN. Do you think Chris Bosh has had a better career than Carmelo Anthony?
Never really gave it much thought.
Carmelo was taken third in that draft, and Bosh was taken sixth.
Right.
And it was just an interesting – it was something interesting that came upon because I was like, you know, Carmelo's got more points. He's obviously got more rebounds. He's the number one guy on his team. He forced himself into a trade, which is the same thing that Bosh did. But Bosh has a ring and may get a second this year, all likelihood he will. And Melo may never get a ring. Melo may be the new Patrick Ewing.
So, better from what perspective? Better from what perspective?
To the same perspective that LeBron James has had a better career than Dwayne Wade.
I mean, would I take Carmelo over Chris Bosh? Yes. You know, but I think for Carmelo is a good enough player that he can be the number one option on a title-based team. You know, Chris Bosh can't.
Okay.
You know, Carmelo is, I wouldn't say a definitive Hall of Famer. Chris Bosh, to me, is a little bit more on the peripheral. I would take Melo, but again, it depends. You know, for Miami, Bosh would be a better fit. But as an overall player, I would take Anthony.
Well, absolutely. Okay. So that was just a question that was today. I mean, speaking from a local perspective, the Knicks are playing horrendous. They've just lost to Amar'e Stoudemire for 6 more weeks. And you're not hearing all the, hey, we're better without Stoudemire, which we did about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And I'd love to get Jared Swirling's impressions on this, and we'll try and get him on next week about this and how the Knicks are going to go forward without Amar'e. And right now, they're third in the conference behind the Heat and the Pacers. And the Pacers have slowly had a very good season. I mean, they're going to be probably the 2 or 3 seed and avoid playing Boston in that first round. So they're going to be a dangerous team coming up. And the Nets have been the Nets. They win a couple, they lose a couple, they win a couple, they lose a couple. Whole lot of talent on that team, but not really anything to write home about. I think we got like 5 more minutes. So would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I'll go first.
Please do.
The most impressive athletic performance this weekend came from probably the best athlete over the age of 45 in the world today. Bernard Hopkins wins a light heavyweight championship at age 48 in a dominating decision over Tavares Cloud. This was a guy who in the 90s was hated. He was in jail for 8 years. He came out, you know, he was this badass, you know, middleweight. Never got the credit of a Roy Jones. Never got the credit of a James Toney. And fought better competition. Beat Carlos Monzon's record for most career defenses of a title. And now, as he's gotten older, he's gone from being hated to kind of being admired and loved. And, you know, he was impressive. He deserved the win. And he's most likely could be a light heavyweight champion at the age of 50. If only all of us were in such good shape. Congratulations, Bihop.
Okay, well, two things first. Breaking news. Percy Harvin signs for $67 million over 6 years, an average of 12.85, which I believe is more than the Mike Wallace deal. So he is now number three.
No, that doesn't make sense. If it's 67 over 6, then the average is 11 and change.
Wallace was 65?
Well, but he was over 5.
Wallace was 65 over 5. Okay. So Harvin gets a $12 million signing bonus, and then his next year's salary is $11 million. So basically he's got $25 million guaranteed under that deal. Well, way to go, Percy Harvin's agent. That's a great deal for a guy that's never made the All-Pro team as a wide receiver. So kudos to you. Chris Canny also signed with the – hold on. I just had it. He just did sign. He signed with the Ravens. So Chris Canny joins the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens to play probably next to Arthur Jones and Terrell Suggs. So – okay, my finishing comment, well, Mr. Kamen stole it, thanks, but I'll take number two.
Did you really think I was not going to touch on Bernard Hopkins?
I didn't know. I was hoping you wouldn't. That's why I was like, you go first. All right, number two. When I played sports when I was a kid, I was outfitted with certain equipment. Especially when I played baseball. I was outfitted with a bat, I was outfitted with a glove, I was outfitted with a helmet, and most importantly, I was outfitted with an athletic supporter. Yesterday, Jordan Valdespin, who has become one of my favorite Mets, hit a home run off of Justin Verlander in the first inning of the game. Justin Verlander, the Cy Young Award winner. And then on the next pitch, I believe it was the third inning, he decided to bunt. Well, he didn't get the bunt down. And the ball found, there. Where every male, old, young, and indifferent, would not like to get hit. Basically, got kicked in the jimmy. And that was not bad enough. Until word came out that Jordan Valdespin was missing the essential equipment that every single player, when you're a Little League player, gets. He was not wearing a cup. Honestly, Jordan, how stupid can you be? So, for all those that listen, if you're a parent, please provide your children with an athletic supporter if they're male. Please make sure that they wear it, and please make sure that they understand why it's important. Because I've gotten hit in Jimmy with a baseball, too. Unlike Jordan Valdespin, I had my cup on, and it didn't hurt very much. But if you saw him yesterday, you would understand how much that ball hurt. And I don't mean balls, I mean ball. For Seth Kamens, this has been Sean Palmer. We have a great time. Next week, hopefully we'll have on our Knicks expert. And in 2 weeks, we'll have the A-10 talking about the tournament. It's been a great time. Talk to you all later. See ya.